No. It's great it's great having John with us once again. It feels like an age, but I guess it's been about 2 years since John was last with us on the webcast, and it's just great having him back. And of course, Barry's here with us, and as well. And so it's the Three Amigos on the new format, and we've actually managed to get the names, or I've managed to get the names on the right person. So I feel really pleased about that. Here we are, ready for a live discussion with John. So, here we are. People are joining us live on Facebook, and welcome. You can use the comments. We're kind of monitoring them on our own pages a little bit. Most of the comments that will be monitored will come through my page, and we'll hopefully get to see those. But feel free to comment, feel free to chat to one another, say hello to John. John, of course, has moved house since we last saw him. So, John, just tell us a little bit where you live now.
I live in East Ayrshire, which is south of Glasgow and close to a little town called Kilmarnock. So we're surrounded by countryside, much different from city living that we had before. What else? We're really enjoying it, and with this lockdown we've been getting lots and lots of gardening done. And I'm getting some colour from the sun we've been having. Not often we see it in Scotland, so you make the most of it when it's there. But we moved just at the end of last June and settled into a smaller house. We downsized a smaller town. We're loving it. Really feels like home. Yeah, life is good.
And where's Fiona teaching?
Her job is about a 20-minute drive from here. She's a head teacher in Barrhead. At the moment, obviously, with all of the measures that have been brought in, she is attending an educational hub that they've set up for all of the schools. Mm-hmm. So she's in one day a week, and the other 4 days she's working from home.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Wow, good stuff. And tell us, Barry, how's your week been, matey?
Well, it's been great, my brother, and it's good to have John on. For those who don't know John, I guess there'd be a few names that we were self-described. Three Amigos, Three Stooges, Three Musketeers.
Or just the Three Monkeys, maybe, John, perhaps, is more apt.
So, of course, for those who might not have, if you've only been on in the last, a couple of years, but John and Mark and I have been doing the webcast, it seemed like forever, and so it's so nice that we have our, to the two amigos, we're just waiting for the third one to come visit again. So yeah, John, it's so great to have you, and good seeing you, and of course it was great seeing you in September in person. The Three Amigos were in one room.
We took a photograph of us, didn't we? First time in history, the three of us in the same room together. Amazing.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was on the webcast with you guys for over 6 years.
Yeah.
6.5 years.
Yeah.
And never once were we all three was in the same room.
And we were in the same room in America with a glass of something to celebrate, as I remember.
Yeah. It's amazing, you know. Maybe we're a little bit man ahead of our time a bit with all the social distancing that's going on now. This is the only way we can actually do it, you know. So, but it's good, and it's of course welcome to our new format, you know, as on Facebook. And Mark and I have been having lots of fun, too much fun.
Too much fun.
Going to sort all this out, but so it's great, and I'm looking forward to hearing what's been going on. Like, maybe can you, before, I know you're going to be talking about your books and everything else, but can you kind of give us an update on just, you know, what has happened? I know you moved, but Sonship Ministries and in the U.S., and because you've been traveling to the U.S. more, and I'd love to get an update as well.
Well, it's about a year ago now. When I was looking at writing my books, I decided to set something up separate from Father Heart Scotland. And so Sonship Ministries came out of that. And because I was connecting a lot with the guys in California, still am, through online media, but we set up Sunship USA as well. Really, to initially assist the guys in California to share this revelation of the Father's love with California, but with a vision to expand that and take it wider. So when I'm in the States, if I'm not doing a Father Heart school, which is would generally be under Father Heart Scotland or Father Heart Ministries, then other events we do would be done under Sonship Ministries USA.
Cool.
So cool. That's awesome.
The UK arm was really just somewhere to host my information about my books and what I'm doing and things.
Cool. Very good.
Awesome.
Good stuff. Now, John, I had a conversation with you at the beginning of the year, back in January, I remember, and we were just chatting, and you were saying, what had I got on? And I rattled through my diary, which actually seemed very busy at the time. and then I said to you, so John, what have you got lined up? And I think you were obviously prophetic. You were obviously seeing this lockdown period and the rest of us clearing our diaries, because you said to me something along the lines of, Father's just said, keep the diary clear, or something like that, John.
Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about that and reflect back on that and how you feel about that for us, because obviously all of us have now got clear diaries because we've had to cross everything out. But you kind of were ahead of the game, so just talk to us about that, if you like, John. That'd be great.
Just, you know, you guys know it, in itinerant ministry, you come to the end of 1 year and you're thinking, okay, what have I got next year? What do I want to keep free for family or whatever? And as I was asking the Lord, I was just saying, okay, Father, what's next year? Who do you want to connect me with? Who do you want me to revisit? You know, and I just quite clearly said, I don't want you to make any plans for next year. Yeah. I was like, but that's how I make my money. You know, I've just been honest. I was like, but Father, if I don't travel, I don't have any income, you know. Totally mercenary. But he was just quite persistent, don't plan anything. And I knew he was speaking about planning trips to different nations and countries and things. I did break that rule once. I was contacted before all of this lockdown by a guy from Bulgaria who wanted me to come out to do a conference, and I said okay, and he wanted to do it in April, so I said okay. And of course, about 2 weeks after we arranged it all, and I bought flights, Bulgaria closed its borders. So I listened and then I stopped listening for a moment. But yeah, it's been interesting, because I think the lockdown didn't come as such a shock to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't having to cancel lots of events or trips. It's almost like the Lord knows that I wouldn't have coped well with that. The shock of it and the trauma of it. So I kind of been preparing myself for what will this year is essentially, I'm just going to take the time to know him. You know, and that was the thing that came out clearly. I just felt that the phrase that I felt Spirit whisper to me was that my purpose is just to know him and make him known.
Mm-hmm.
But the emphasis was on the knowing him.
And we're 6 weeks into the lockdown, 4 months into the year. Can you sort of share anything with us? Knowing him at a deeper level, what's that looking like? What's that feeling like? I mean, you might not want to say anything, but if you can, just expand that for us.
I think I've realized that even though I've come into this revelation of love, there was still a part of me looking to cognitively know God. Mm-hmm. You know, there was still an element of, and a part of me saying, when I was saying, Lord, I want to know you, that I was thinking, up here. But I guess it's just more and more. I find myself the other day repeating a prayer that I've prayed lots of times over the years, saying, "Father, I just want to have a heart to know you."
Mm-hmm.
And I just suddenly thought, "Oh, John, you're not asking him for a mind to know him. You're asking him for a heart to know him."
Yeah.
You know, and so that's, I guess, because I thought cognitively I needed to understand so that I could articulate. But actually, that's not it at all.
Mm.
I need to experience him,
mm-hmm,
to be able to speak about what I'm experiencing, not what I know.
Yeah.
And so that's been an interesting journey for me.
Yeah.
Just in these few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm kind of looking forward to where it's going.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit trepidatious as well. I recall one day, just spending time soaking, and then I suddenly just burst into tears and sobbed. Wow. I mean, really sobbed my heart out for 20 minutes. I have no idea what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no idea. But it was him. So I'm thinking, okay, that's just the start.
Yeah.
It's going to look like if this goes on for months.
You might be getting through a lot of tissues, John. It was interesting you say that. At the beginning of the year, I was just looking at it again in my journal today, and I wrote down to see things at a deeper level. That was just what I wrote. And then I went to church the following Sunday, and somebody said to me, "Mark, I really believe you're going to see things that other people don't see," which is kind of like encouraging. And I've just been jotting things down in my journal. I mean, you know me, John. Barry knows, obviously. You know, my life message is a father to you. You know, and I keep just getting little phrases, little sentences, and just jotting them down. And it's like you said, and we, you know, I guess we all know that, those of us who are watching. But you know, we know that God is a father. But what we need to do is we need to experience Him being a father to us. And you know, I keep finding myself just jotting little things down and thinking, you know, where did that come from? Just the journey that we're on. And that's good to hear, John. And maybe we'll have you back in a few weeks and see what more you're tapping into. It's good stuff. I like this format. This is good to have the
really
three
good.
Of us back together again. And just looking on Facebook, we've got 61 people watching at the moment.
Wow.
Many people writing comments. We thank you for that. This is just great. Such a good way to have all three of us on. So, John, we want to talk about your new book in a bit more detail in just a few moments, because I really believe that's it's going to be a really significant book. You've done so well with it, matey. That's really good. But this is actually the second book that you've written, but you wrote the first book. So tell us a little bit about book number one, what it's about, why you wrote it, where we can buy it, what was stirring in as you wrote it. Just unpack it for us a bit.
Well, I think I knew for a number of years that I had books in me. I remember, way back in 2005 when I first began to meet with Father. Ivan and Isabel Allen prophesied over me, and Isabel prophesied that there were books in me. She prophesied there's books in Fiona, so we're waiting on those coming, not just her doctorate writings. And I kind of knew before Isabel prophesied that there were writings in me. Before I was a believer, I used to write poetry and short stories and things. Never tried to publish them because I wasn't confident enough in my writing or anything. So I knew that there was writing in me. But as I journeyed in this revelation I saw everyone around me writing books, you know, Mark, you'd written, Trevor, obviously James and Denise had, and Barry, and I'm thinking, everyone's overtaking me. You don't say that out loud, really, though, at the time. Just once you've processed it in your heart, you're free to say that that's what it was like. But I knew it wasn't the right time for me. And so I actually, when I was out in California, I was with the Galliano family, Cindy and Douglas, who had become really great friends. And they have a beautiful house outside of town, out in the countryside. You know, you can hear the coyotes at night and everything. They have a hammock hanging outside on their front porch. And so I lay in the hammock with my iPad and I just began to type. And by the time I left them, I had written 12 chapters of a book.
Wow.
You know, so just the peace, the tranquility, the love and hospitality that those guys gave to me just brought my heart into a place where it was free to express. Mm-hmm. I'm forever grateful to them for it. So this was the first book, Love to Life, that came out. And it's really my journey into Father's love. Mm. I talk a lot about the brokenness and the trauma of my life, how that affected me as a human being, how it impacted upon my Christianity and my attitude and approach to God. And I talk a little bit about my encounter with the Father and how I've been growing with that. A little bit about what my understanding of love is, which is growing and deepening.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else I wrote in it. It's full of pictures of me throughout my life. So from a baby through my youth and teens and up to into my 50s. You know, I talked about how I hid behind things to hide my heart, how my heart was incapable of receiving love because I closed it down so much. And so I share the process of God bringing me through that from having a closed heart to an open heart and from a hard heart to a soft heart. And I think one of the biggest lessons I learned, and I speak about it quite a bit in that first book, is that God isn't trying to fix me. That, I mean, you know, most people watching probably know this, but it was a huge revelation to me. God is not trying to fix me. You know, church had been trying to fix me for Christian experience. But God wasn't trying to do that.
Yeah.
He just wanted me to know that I was worth loving.
Mm-hmm.
That has revolutionized my life and taken my whole life in a different direction from what I ever thought it would be. So that's that first book. It's really just my journey to Father's love and where Father's love is taking me.
So where can we get hold of that book, John? Come on, do the promo.
It's a paperback, signed by the author.
Whoa, that makes it twice its value, of course.
It's also available in ebook, EPUB, PDF, AZW3, from my website, sonship.co.uk. That's sonship.co.uk is the website.
Mm-hmm.
It's also available worldwide on Amazon.
Great.
So Amazon, in all the different countries where Amazon operates, it's available. If I think, you know, for some of you in other countries, it might be expensive to post from the UK. So posting package, it's cheaper when you're able to buy in your own country.
Yeah.
Or you can buy the download from me.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well done, John. I've read both books and they are good. I particularly, I've known John, I don't know how many years we've known each other, but it's a good few.
10 or 12 years, something like that.
I guess it is. We first met in Hemel Hempstead. I was really put out by this guy who I'd never met in my life before. I'd heard of him. We were at a conference. I just wanted to get home. And then this guy comes up to me and says, "Can I have a lift to the station?" I mean, it was like half a mile. It was not out of my way at all, but I was like,
You hit it well, Mark.
Yeah, I hit it well. I'm good at doing that, John. And I took this guy to the station. By the time we got to the station, we realized we were born in the same months of the same year. We both were married to Fiona, a different Fiona, I hasten to add. Both of our Fionas were teachers in Scotland. Well, my Fiona had been in Scotland before moving down. And we both discovered that our dads had died when we were about the same age. So in that little journey, we kind of suddenly found all these things in common, which was great. And then over the years, we just got to know each other really well. And so I've known John for 10, 12 years. I've got to know a bit of his story, and we've done schools together. And of course, you hear the stories and everything. But reading the book, obviously, I got to know John a lot more. But the thing that amazed me, you won't mind me saying this, John, because you know oh. where I'm saying it from. It's like I thought, wow, you know, this guy, what a transformation. What a transformation. You know, to see where John is now and what he's doing now and the heart that John has. And, you know, I'm just looking at the comments, which are on my screen. And John, you're well loved, mate. You know, I can see that on, they're coming through on my Facebook page, and I can see them on my screen. And, you know, you're clearly well loved, well appreciated. And I just read that book and I thought, what an amazing transformation of where the journey that John's been on. And, you know, we kind of spiritualize it a bit and say, oh, it was the Lord. Well, you know, yeah, it was. And of course it was. But we have to respond.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Father touches our hearts and we've got a choice. You know, are we going to run into love or are we going to run away from love? And I know all three of us, you know, over the years, we've seen many, many people run away from love. And to us, that's one of the saddest things that happens. You know, you get to the end of a school and you see people and you just see them. They've run away from love. But the joy is, of course, when people run into love. And John is someone who has run into love. And you read that book and you can see it's not all been easy. So bless you, mate. Barry,
I think
just
add something.
Yeah.
I think people don't often realise, because of what we do, that there are times that we're faced with a choice to
absolutely
run into or run away from love, even now.
Yeah.
There are times where it's like, Lord, this might be too difficult for me.
Yeah.
You
know, and if we're honest, there are times we run away from it as well, aren't there? Well, I do. I mean, I can't speak for you guys, but I know.
I don't. I have no problem.
Well, I was just going to turn to you, Barry, because I thought we needed to hear a little bit from you. Come on, just tell us a little bit from your own experience. Not your own, just your own life, but the places you've been, the people you've met with, about running into love.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, I just want to affirm our dear amigo John as well. Like, John, just your transparency and your, you know, what you shared in your books, it's amazing. And, you know, I think of, you know, Nathaniel in one of Jesus' disciples, and Jesus was actually impressed with him, and he said, "Here is an Israelite in whom there's no guile." And one of the things I've always appreciated about you is just your honesty and your transparency, and that comes through in your books as well. And it just, and I you know, at the end of the day, I think that all we can share with one another is our life, right? Yeah. And so much of what I think the riches of your life are shared in your books. And it's like, you know, it's just like you are cracking open your rib cage and inviting people to come and take a look. And I think that's the power that changes lives. So I just want to affirm that in you and just say, you know, I'm just glad you're my brother and so glad to see you on the webcast. But, I kind of joke and I say, I don't have that problem. Of course, this is a journey.
I lie, pants and fire.
This is a journey that we're all on. And I think one of the things for me over the years, going back to Jack Winter and of course James and Denise, and it just the foundation of just transparency and honesty and just a genuine just pursuit of just being real. And yeah, so for me it's like, you know, the prodigal son story. And of course, sometimes I vacillate between the older brother and the younger brother. Sometimes I'm, you know, self-righteous, and other times I go, but it's just like when we need to come to our senses and head back home, right? So we all do that for sure.
Yeah, good. Thanks, Barry. Good stuff. Let's get on to this new book, because this is really good. John's going to talk about his new book, Made in His Image. He very kindly gave me a sneak preview a few weeks ago before it was published. And actually, I'm gonna get the real thing, John. I'm gonna get on that website later and get one sorted, because I just felt I needed a signed copy, you know. Anyway, John's new book. I've read many, many books on this topic, and John's new one came out a few weeks ago, and I read it before it came out, and all I can say is, wow, it's incredibly well written. It's incredibly well reasoned and argued. It's incredibly biblical, and it's very, very easy to read, which nails it for me. So, John, take as long as you want to talk about Made in His Image, why you wrote it, what's in the book, why you felt you had to write it. Just take the floor, man. Over to you.
Feel free to interject with questions, or you know, if you see people asking things on the post, smart.
Yeah, sure.
Feel free to ask me. Well, the reason that this is the book, Made in His Image, again, it's available from the same outlets, from sonship.co.uk and from Amazon Worldwide, paperback and in ebook formats from myself or from Amazon. I guess this began really back in 2010. I read a verse in Genesis 3:20 where it says that Adam named his wife Eve because she would become mother of all the living. And it sent me on a whole journey of thought and research and praying and thinking, primarily examining my own heart, because I saw something in that verse. God had never told Adam to call his wife another name. And so I began to look at that, and in it, I began to see the seeds of what we call misogyny and sexism. But I never felt equipped to write the book until recently. I guess what really opened my eyes to see it a bit more deeply was reading Denise Jordan's book, The Forgotten Feminine, and hearing her speak about the war in the feminine. I began to understand that this was something that's so woven into the fabric of our cultures and societies that we're not even conscious when we're acting in it. And as I began to read and study and just speak and listen to women, I realized that I had no idea what women were experiencing throughout the world. I knew facts about things, but to actually hear women, you know, I quote a man called, I think it's Jason Katz, I quote him in the book, and he speaks about seminars that he does. And on a board, he draws down one side, you know, men, women. And then he says to the men in his audience, you know, men, what steps do you take on a daily basis to avoid sexual assault? And the men kind of snigger and laugh and make some funny comments until eventually one says, well, nothing. And then he says, okay, ladies, what steps do you take on a daily basis to avoid sexual assault? And says, you see the men's jaws dropping when every woman in the room puts their hands up. I'm constantly talking about, you know, I leave a male voice on my answer machine. I always carry keys in my hand. I never look a man in the eye if I'm alone with him in an elevator and it's just incredible that I had no idea that. And I, as I spoke with my wife, she, those are the things that she thinks about and looks out for, you know. So when she would go running, she would never go running on the canal on her own. She would run on the main roads, but she wouldn't go down the canal on her own because it's a quiet, lonely place. I did it all the time. I ran 5 kilometres 3 times a week on that canal on my own, and then no thought about danger. And so as I began to realise that, and then obviously the whole explosion of the Me Too movement, you know, I took part in and engaged with a group here in the UK who were campaigning to get rid of the tabloid newspaper's page 3, which was always a picture of a bare-breasted woman. And so I began to see sexism and misogyny woven into every fabric of our societies and cultures, and even worse, I began to see how it operated in my life, how it woven tentacles into my attitudes, my thinking, my speech, my behaviour, my thoughts. I think I say in the book that I thank God that I've become aware of it and I despair of ever being fully free from it. That's just the reality of the insidious poison that is injected into our cultures. And so as I began to write the book, initially I didn't really have any idea of what I wanted to say in it. And so I wrote this huge thing of about 500 pages. I sent it to Stephen Hill, and Stephen wrote back to me and said, you know, you'll probably never ask me to ever review one of your books again. But, you know, and he gave me some really helpful advice on how to shape it and make it more readable, which I was really grateful for. And I probably will ask him to review books again because it was really helpful advice. And so what I actually started with was my own search for masculinity. From being a little boy without a dad to show me what a man is and all of that entailed. And in my formative years, I didn't put everything in it because there are some things just it's not put in print. But so I talked a lot about that, and I talked about our perception of masculinity today compared with the masculinity demonstrated and experienced by the man in the garden. And I go on to speak about the issue of misogyny through the different ages, you know, what people were in the past were saying. I mean, it's incredible. As I began to look, I found all of these records of women who pretended to be men so that they could pursue their passions. You know, some of them pretended to be men to enter things like judo competitions. And when they were discovered to be women, the prizes were taken away from them. There was one, a girl called Marina, who became a monk called Marinus. And she was accused, obviously falsely, of fathering a child. And she never broke her secret. She cared for that child until she died. No one knew until she died that she was actually a woman and not a man. So all of these experiences of women, you know, like the Bronte sisters, when they first began to write, they used male pseudonyms, using their own initials with the surname Kerr. So that, because they said that they perceived there was a prejudice against women writers. So all of these things, as again to discover and just seeing how deep and how broad these tentacles had spread into our cultures and societies and our treatment of women, you know. I mean, I read, and I included it in the book, but where the Russian Parliament, just a few years ago, downgraded the crime of domestic violence and you would only be considered committing a crime if it resulted in hospital treatment. Anything less than hospital treatment was not criminal. That is quite frightening. There a modern society looks that way in families and treatment of women and children. So those were some of the issues. I looked obviously at church fathers, how church fathers portrayed women, how popular philosophers like Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, how these people portrayed women, and how that's influenced our modern thinking on gender relationships. Because, you know, these are the fathers of Western philosophy, from which we take all of our understanding of culture, society, relationship, gender, life roles, you know, family setups. These guys are the ones who have set the foundation that we build upon. And I was shocked when I began to read some of the things that they wrote. And then when I began to read the church fathers, how some of them portrayed women, that blew me away. You know, I was just appalled. And again, there was a lot of soul searching on my own part, because I may not have vocalized it the way some of these men did, but some of those attitudes had been, perhaps still are, ingrained in parts of my soul. So, a lot of self-examination during the writing process of this. And the second half of the book is really more of a theological examination of church practice and thinking on women in leadership, headship, submission, what it really means for a woman to be helper, all of those kinds of things. And I finish up by saying that only love can create any sort of equilibrium. Only love in the hearts of human beings can bring any kind of egalitarianism. You know, we can campaign all we like, and we can make laws and rules and regulations and try to change systems, but actually it's only when hearts are changed that systemic change takes place, and the only force I know powerful enough to do that is the love of the Father.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate that. I think one of the things that struck me when I read it, because I've seen this so often in recent writings on this topic, which is so important, is, and the best way I can describe it is a rise of Christian feminism. Mm. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
It's kind of the only way I can describe it. It's to me, it's like a lot of things I've read have gone, obviously we've gone in one direction, and a balance is absolutely necessary. But a lot of what I've been reading on this topic is has gone the other way, and it's actually been a lot of it's been written by men, but it's actually ended up putting men down, which of course is what men have done to women for centuries. But what I felt when I read your book, what I really appreciated when I read your book, was it was so beautifully balanced, and it had a very, very good and clear perspective. And, you know, there was none of this sort of feminism wrapped up in a religious guise, which for me was a great blessing, because so much of the stuff I think is sort of putting that around, and that's just going the other way. And I was really just struck again. I mean, I read it in the book, and I was struck again just you saying it now, John. It's only the love of the Father. You see, I think for me, the when you told me what you were writing the book about, I thought, hang on. John's a father heart teacher. You know, he does Father Hart schools. you know, how does this fit into what the three of us are obviously very used to doing? But the way you bring it to that conclusion is so important. So can you just say a little bit more about that? You just said a little brief bit about it just as you finished just then, but really, can you just expand on that, how this is so, how this has to be so rooted in the love of the Father?
Well, I think because our worldviews are influenced by tradition, culture that we grew up in. So growing up as a young kid in 1960s and 1970s Glasgow, it's a very machisto kind of culture, you know, and the treatment of women was just normal. And so you imbibe that, it becomes a part of who you are. It helps to form some of your core values even. And only love is capable of changing core values. You know, doctrinal statements can't do it. Theological treaties can't do it. This book can't do it. Only love can change our hearts so that our new way of living, our new way of seeing, our new way of understanding is coming from something rooted in our hearts, where before there was something of inequity, persecution, bigotry, prejudice in our hearts. Love uproots those things, plants itself. And when we read Corinthians 13, where love is patient and kind, it's not rude, it's not easily angered, it never thinks of itself, it's complete opposite to misogyny and sexism. And it's necessary for both men and women because, you know, I quote a couple of authors in the book, where, and I agree with them, men are victims of misogyny and sexism as much as women are. It's just not as obvious.
Yeah.
You know, I love, there's a lady who, she says that sexism and misogyny are like partners. Sexism sets up a construct and a system that says this is what men should be, this is what women should be, and misogyny polices that system. Mm-hmm. It puts women in their place when they don't live to what sexism says women should be. But it also slaps men into place when men step outside of what we say masculinity is supposed to be. Mm. You know? So it's the attack on femininity, which is part of the image of God. And so we have this warped view of people, we have this warped view of God, and we have this warped view of ourselves. And very often, it's at the very core of who we are, our own identity and the identity that we put upon others. And for that to be uprooted, it's got to be love.
Yeah.
It's the only force I know that's powerful enough to uproot something so deeply ingrained in our, not just the cultures around us, but let's, you know, bring it down to a personal basis, deeply ingrained in our own hearts.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's racism, misogyny, you know, hatred of Baptists or Catholics or Pentecostals or whatever it is.
Mm.
These things are ingrained because they've been handed down to us through generations. And we've believed the words of our forefathers and taken hold of them and made them ours. When actually, the Apostle Peter says in 1 Peter that we have been redeemed from the futile ways handed to us by our ancestors.
Mm.
And I realised that so much of my own life was rooted in the ancestors of my family, my city, my country, my denomination, my Western setup. And as I've watched my own journey of love developing in my heart, I see love uprooting a lot of this stuff. Some of it's painful. Because there has to be a recognition and an acknowledgement that is not separate from me. That attitude, that belief, that behaviour is actually a part of who I am at this point in time. And I think in until we're willing to do that and have those honest conversations, love can't take root as deeply as it wants to or it needs to.
Mm.
It can't complete the uprooting of futile thinking, futile attitudes, futile behaviours. And until we acknowledge and own that those are our attitudes, those are my behaviours and my thinking. But when we, it's like you were saying earlier, Mark, and you were saying earlier, Barry, about running into love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think love is painful, but it's not. No, love exposes pain that already exists within us,
mm-hmm.
because it wants to bring that pain out and deal with it.
Yeah.
So that there's, in that part of our lives, that part of our souls and our hearts, there's a measure of healing, a measure of growth, where love itself is rooted and grows along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't know if you both answered
it. Absolutely.
No, brilliant. Absolutely good. Yeah. Thanks, John. Barry.
And the other thing, John, maybe you can just touch on a little bit, is just this idea, of course, that you know, you touched on in your book, but the in his image being, you know, Genesis 1, 26 and 27, that God created male and female in his image. And oftentimes when we look at the scriptures and even the fatherhood of God through a masculine mindset that he's masculine, and that we actually miss the feminine expression of his love and the mothering and everything that he is, because he's neither male nor female, but you know, he loves us with a masculine love and a feminine love. So can you just talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
And yeah,
There is a chapter in the book in which I speak about the femininity of God, and obviously, God has no gender. He's neither male nor female. God is spirit. God is love. Those are the only two descriptions or definitions of God's being that we have. Jesus says God is spirit, and John the Apostle says God is love. Mm. And so, we have an anthropomorphic view of God. Mm-hmm. You know, we make him in human likeness. We ascribe to him human attributes and human thinking and human behaviours, when he actually is none of those things. But in order for man to be made like God and the woman to be made in his image, God must contain both femininity and masculinity, and they're not separate entities.
Mm.
They are together, mm-hmm. the whole image of God. Yeah. Masculinity and femininity. And so when God expresses his pleasure, he's expressing both masculinely and femininely. Mm-hmm. When God demonstrates his power, he demonstrates it in a masculine and in a feminine way. You know, we ascribe power as masculine. Yes, it is, but women can demonstrate power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men can demonstrate compassion.
Yeah.
You know? And so, for me, understanding that, and Denise Jordan was instrumental in helping me understand that. But the thing that struck me most is that, you know, the goal of a believer is to become like the Lord, you know, to be in his image.
Mm-hmm.
But while we teach men that femininity is bad,
mm-hmm.
and they're suppressing that, they're pushing femininity out of their lives, they're actually resisting God.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Because to be made in the image of God, to become like Jesus, is to embrace femininity and masculinity within a single individual being.
Mm-hmm.
I'm convinced that spirituality is a feminine attribute.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And so when we as men try to suppress or reject feminine attitudes, attributes, characteristics within our own being, when they manifest, we are suppressing our ability to be spiritual.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, and it's, I think I said in the book, but, you know, I look around at church services I've been in, and a lot of the men with hands in their pockets, and they're going, and they're not really singing. The words are coming out of their mouth, but they're more of a whisper. And it's not because they don't love God. It's because they've been told that that expression is feminine, and they've been taught their whole lives to subdue it. So for me, this whole idea of the image of God, if we only allow ourselves to express what we consider to be masculine attributes, then we will never become the image of Jesus. Mm-hmm. If we only allow ourselves to express what we consider to be feminine attributes, we will never become like Jesus. Mm-hmm. Because the goal, the aim of God himself is to conform us to the image of his son. Romans 8:29 tells us that.
Mm.
And so, in the conforming us to the image of his son and allowing ourselves to be conformed, I think it's vital to be willing to embrace all aspects of the nature of God. Mm. And he is both feminine and masculine in his expression of being.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Fantastic. Thank you, John.
Very good.
John, thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm going to invite you just to pray for us, not just Barry and I, but all of us.
I'll take it.
And when you finish, we'll just wrap it up. But thank you so much for being with us. It's been too long.
It's been great.
Too long, mate.
It's been great to be sandwiched in between you both again.
That's all we need to do with you. Anyway, go for it, John.
Yeah.
Father, thank you. Thank you for how you lead us, how you love us. Mm. That the expression of your love is the nurture of a mother, the encouragement of a father.
Mm.
Thank you for your wisdom, Father. Mm. Thank you that your love changes us.
Yeah.
Your love brings us more and more out of a place of darkness and oppression and tradition and futility into a wide open space of love and joy and peace. Thank you, Father, for all that comes from you. Thank you, Jesus, for bringing to us all that comes from the Father.
Yeah.
Holy Spirit, thank you for enabling us to receive all that the Father gives us.
Yeah.
And I pray, Lord, that prayer of mine for you, I pray for each of us, Father, that you would increasingly give us hearts to know you.
Yeah.
To experience your love, and by experiencing your love, to experience what you are really like.
Yeah.
And your femininity, and your masculinity.
Yeah.
Oh, Father, help us to be honest about our own prejudices, attitudes that don't align with love.
Mm-hmm.
And Father, right now, anything that we've become aware of, even as we've been speaking tonight, we just bring it to you and say, Father, I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
It's a part of me, and I don't like it being a part of me. I don't like when it expresses itself in my life, in my relationships, in my business, in my ministry.
Yeah.
Papa, will you uproot it and plant love in its place?
Yeah.
Thank you. Your love never gives up.
Mm-hmm.
Your love never fails to be poured out upon me. Thank you. Your grace and mercy and kindness and goodness.
Yeah.
Thank you for your great power that works in our behalf, just like the power that rose Jesus from the grave. You've given to serve us with that power, Father. You stoop to come underneath us and lift us up.
Yeah.
Thank you, Papa.
Yeah, Lord. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, John.
Ah, mate.
It's good, eh?
So rich.
Feels as though you've been away.
John, just tell us again where we can all get your book. Just tell us.
Paperback and ebooks are available on sonship.co.uk. That's my personal website, sonship.co.uk. As I say, paperback, ebooks in different formats that you can download and access right away without having to wait on the postal service, which is a little bit slower during these times.
Oh, I wonder why that is.
And if you're too far away and it's too expensive for me to post it to you, you can obtain it from Amazon Worldwide Services.
Yeah.
So whatever country you're in, whichever Amazon you're able to access, you'll be able to get the book. Both books from there, actually.
Yeah.
You can get both of them.